From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The American Cancer Society says on its website that, quote, radio frequency waves given off by cell phones don't have enough energy to damage DNA directly or to heat body tissues. Because of this, it's not clear how cell phones might be able to cause cancer. Most studies, say the ACS, done in the lab have supported the idea that RF waves do not cause DNA damage. Indeed, the idea that cell phones cause cancer is generally accepted as an assertion of conspiracy theorists. Now, an in-depth investigative report by The Nation magazine has found that since the 1990s, cell phone industry representatives have sought to hide the link between certain forms of brain tumors and cell phone usage. Mark Hertzgard is my guest. He is The Nation's investigative editor at large and the author of 7 books that have been translated into 16 languages, including On Bended Knee, The Press and the Reagan Presidency. His most recent books are Brave Hearts, Whistleblowing in the Age of Snowden, and Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. And he joins me to discuss his Nation magazine cover story, How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe, a special investigation. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, let's talk about who it was that the cell phone industry representative that later went on to occupy a very special government position basically worked to tamp down what one of his own researchers found. Tom Wheeler, a familiar name to those people who have studied the issue of net neutrality, in the 1990s was part of the cell phone industry. And the researcher that he hired and his industry representatives hired to give them the result that they wanted turned out to give them the opposite result. Tell us that story in a nutshell.
Sure. Thomas Wheeler is a very good example of the revolving door syndrome that occurs in Washington, D.C., where top industry people end up in top government positions and then go back into industry. So as you mentioned, Tom Wheeler was the chair of the Federal Communications Commission under President Barack Obama. And the FCC, of course, is the regulator of the wireless industry, cell phones included. But in the 1990s, Tom Wheeler was the head of the Wireless Industries Trade Association, the CTIA. So he was essentially the wireless industry's point man in Washington, their key lobbyist. And in 1993, the wireless industry had a problem because cell phones had been released on the U.S. consumer market without government safety testing, which I found is probably the single most extraordinary fact we uncovered in doing this investigation for The Nation magazine. And by 1993, some customers were getting cancer, and they were blaming the phones, and they were suing some of the cell phone manufacturers. So Tom Wheeler quickly called a press conference and told the media, we're going to have our own big research program into this. Of course, cell phones are safe. We're just going to revalidate that. So he hired a gentleman called George Carlo, an epidemiologist, who seemed like a good bet at the time because Carlo had done research for the chemical industry that said that dioxin in small doses wasn't so terrible. And he had done research for the breast implants, saying that those weren't necessarily so bad.
So he was a reliable scientist who could be relied upon to toe the industry line.
Well, I think that's what Tom Wheeler thought. And even George Carlo admits that he did do those studies. He said that he was an honest man, but he says, look, I'm sure they saw me as an industry guy. But by the end of the 1990s, after George Carlo had supervised a $28.5 million study, which both commissioned about 50 new scientific studies, but also reviewed all the existing literature, not just here in the United States, but the scientific literature around the world. He came back, George Carlo came back to the industry with the answer they did not want to hear. And he said that there were, quote unquote, serious questions about cell phones and cancer and genetic damage, especially among children. And he then put those concerns in writing in a smoking gun memo from October 7, 1999, which he wrote to the CEO of AT&T and the CEO of about 28 of the other biggest companies in the wireless industry, laying out the findings and saying, look, these are preliminary. This doesn't prove the issue one way or the other, but it looks like there's the possibility of cancer and DNA damage, and you must do the right thing. You should tell consumers as much information as we have so that they can decide how much of this risk they want to take on for themselves. And by the way, some members of the industry are falsely saying that phones are safe, including for children, and that's simply not true. Well, once the scientists sent that letter, Tom Wheeler, the head of the industry trade association, went berserk and starts trashing him in the media and basically saying, you never showed us these studies, they were never peer reviewed, you know, a bunch of lies, frankly. And but it worked. And Tom Wheeler doused the controversy. Most of the journalists on the beat bought the story, and the cell phone industry went on to basically become now today the fastest growing industry on earth, certainly one of the biggest, and you'd have to say one of the most influential industries around the world. You and I are talking on wireless technology.
Right.
This is the big technology of our time. And it turns out that just like big tobacco lied about cigarettes, and just like big oil lied about climate change, big wireless has misled us about the true state of science regarding cell phone radiation.
Let's try to dig through a little bit of the reasoning behind why cell phones might not be safe, because people get cancer all the time. And, you know, there's different kinds of cancers, different parts of your body. Some people are genetically predisposed to it. Others get it because they live next to certain kind of industries. It's, you know, to really definitively connect cancer incidence to any particular cause requires very detailed studies, right? And it's never truly... It's very hard to truly point a strong connection. It was years of research to connect lung cancer with cigarette smoking. So how do you sort of explain what the theory might be as to how cell phones could cause cancer, what kinds of cancer, and has that even been studied properly?
Sure. And let me emphasize here, Sonali, that our piece does not argue, our investigative expose in The Nation magazine does not argue that cell phones are dangerous or that they're safe. That is for scientists to decide. But what we do in our piece is expose for the first time this long propaganda campaign that the wireless industry has mounted for decades now to convince us that cell phones are safe.
Because any whiff of danger might dig into their profits.
Yes, well, I think it probably would, in fact. And the truth of the matter is that if you look at the voluminous amount of independent science that's been done now on this, there is a lot of evidence that indicates not just cancer, but also genetic damage. And we'll get into that in a second. Mm-hmm. But I want to emphasize here that one of the findings in our expose is the stark difference between industry-funded science and independently funded science. It looks, if you just look at all of the science together, that there is a split. Some scientists think there is cancer to this radiation, some don't. But scientists who were skeptical about this, a man named Henry Lai, who is a professor of bioengineering emeritus out at the University of Washington, who studied in this area a long time, he looked at those same studies, but he divided them by funding source. And when you do that, the industry-funded studies are 2.5 times less likely to find any kind of health effect than the independently funded studies. That is a devastating fact. Mm-hmm. And so it basically just shows, again, like with big oil and with big tobacco, what industry did is that they sought to create the appearance of scientific uncertainty. And how do they do that? Well, we show they fund their own science. They put industry-friendly scientists on the advisory bodies like the World Health Organization and others. They discredit scientists who question these findings and so forth. You can read the article for all the details. And they do this not just in the United States, but in Europe and Asia as well. So that's really the context in which we have to look at the science. And I want to also reassure everyone who may be listening or watching, just because there is this clear evidence of cancer doesn't mean that every one of you using a wireless device is going to get cancer. And there are specific things that you can do to lower your risk of cancer. And we can talk about that. But understand that most of what you have been told about this cancer risk over the past 25 years has been misleading because it came from the wireless industry. And I'm sorry to say our own profession of journalism has been overly credulous, just like we were with climate change and with tobacco. We have a shameful history here. Let's not get hoodwinked. Let's stop being hoodwinked on this and realize that the wireless industry has been playing us for 25 years.
So, and you've studied the climate crisis. There is a playbook, right? That, obviously moneyed interests in various industries share this playbook, the big tobacco playbook, the climate denialism playbook, and now we're find out on cell phones as well. And a big part of the playbook isn't necessarily saying definitively that these things are safe, but simply to cause enough doubt that you question them. And then people sort of, decide who they want to believe. But once you have enough doubt and create enough skepticism, you've essentially, the industry is essentially won, right?
Well, they're able to blunt any calls for reform. And yes, I came to this investigation of Big Wireless after, I've covered the climate issue for many years now. And I did, I think, the first big expose back in 2006 in Vanity Fair magazine that was the first to draw the connection between the climate deniers and big tobacco. And it was a man named Fred, that was not his name. That's a different one. Frederick Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z. And he was we called him the $45 million man because he took $45 million of tobacco money to basically investigate every possible cause of lung cancer except for cigarettes. And then years later, he became the biggest, the most important scientist who was a climate denier. So that's how I found my way back to the whole tobacco story. And yes, this is the same playbook. Big Tobacco pioneered this playbook. Big Oil perfected this playbook. And now Big Wireless is borrowing this very same playbook and bringing it up to date and using it to basically tell us lies about what is now, the most ubiquitous and loved and addicted piece of technology probably in our society. You try and get a cell phone out of people's hands, good luck.
So essentially, you have these we have these devices that emit and accept radio frequency wireless signals in order to communicate either with satellites, so that's cell service, or with the Wi-Fi router in your home or office or workplace. And that constant invisible wireless communication, it has the potential, in theory, to, say, disrupt DNA in your bodies if it can sort of penetrate the barriers into your bloodstream and your organs, etc. If you hold a phone up right to your ear, you are putting that radiation close to your brain, a very important organ. And so the theory goes that that you could cause damage, you could trigger tumors. Is that sort of accurate? And if so, what are some safeguards, or are there safeguards one can put into place that can protect oneself and still be a cell phone user?
Yes, it's important to emphasize, as we do in our story, that scientists do not fully understand the mechanisms here. Just as, and you mentioned this, Sonali, just as, we didn't understand, tobacco researchers did not understand at first how smoking cigarettes caused various illnesses. So it's not entirely known. It is known, however, that this radiation has breached the brain-blood barrier. And, we talk about it in the article, that it's generally thought that the cancer effect is indirect. But, this is a moving story. And just last week, just Wednesday night, a very important study occurred. And again, the U.S. media has totally ignored it. But there was peer review of a major U.S. government study by the National Toxicology Program, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. They peer reviewed one of the biggest studies yet on cell phone radiation. And they concluded that there was, quote unquote, clear evidence that this kind of radiation can cause cancer. So if you want to reduce your risk of that, one thing is to use a landline. Get an old landline back. Use that as much as possible. I have a landline. I also have a cell phone. I use the cell phone when necessary. But always, you must use it with earbuds. Always limit your calls. Don't stay on the phone for 45 minutes. You know, say what you need to and get off, because it's all a question of the exposure. The more you're exposed to it, the more likely it is that cancer will happen. And again, you mentioned this in your intro, you know, some people are more or less susceptible to this. Remember, not everybody who smokes cigarettes gets lung cancer, right? It's a combination of factors that influence whether any human organism gets cancer.
But surely, so, given the explosion of cell phone ownership and usage around the world, we would have seen some corresponding increase in certain kinds of brain tumors, right?
Yes, and there are researchers who would say that, yes, you are seeing that.
Huh.
It is still hard to detect that out of the statistical noise, partly because these cancers take a long time to develop.
Ah.
And remember, although cell phones have been on the market in the United States since 1984, they really weren't ubiquitous until the mid to late 90s. And people have been using them far, far more now than they used to. You know, it used to be maybe a phone call, a quick snatch of conversation. Now, I mean, you walk down any city street, people are glued to their phones. You take a bus, wherever you are, these things we are addicted to them.
And especially with unlimited data and calling, you don't worry about paying per minute anymore. So you stay on the phone for hours, because why not?
Well, that's true. Remember, this is another parallel with big tobacco. Just like big tobacco deliberately addicted customers by adding nicotine to its cigarettes, you know, quietly, Big Wireless has deliberately addicted its customers. And it's done that in two ways. And, you know, they've admitted this. And we're not breaking this news. They give a dopamine rush when you slide that screen. And they give those likes on tweets and Facebook to get you to keep coming back. That they are addicting. In fact, I would say that, you know, we've now got three out of four adults on the planet have cell phone access. You know, sales increasing every year. Pretty soon, Big Wireless will have the dubious distinction of having addicted more people than Big Tobacco did. And again, mm-hmm. I want to emphasize, they have done this even though they have known for 20 years from their own scientists that there were serious questions about risk, especially among children. Think about that. Thomas Wheeler and the heads of this industry, the CEOs, were told in an October 7, 1999 letter, this is the smoking gun, they were told that this was not safe for kids. They kept that information to themselves, and worse, they then went out into the world and denied it and said, it's safe. Well, now independent scientists are telling us just last week, maybe not so safe. Who are you going to believe?
I mean, when we're talking about children's brains, of course, these are extremely sensitive growing organs, and children are generally more susceptible to any kinds of impacts from radiation than adults are. Their growing bodies are more vulnerable. And so essentially reducing the sort of Wi-Fi connection with your cell phone to, as much as possible will help. Putting it in airplane mode or whatever can also reduce your risk. Not leaving your phone while it's on next to your head as you sleep at night, which so many of us do. We now use our cell phones as alarm clocks. We wake up first thing in the morning and read, to check Facebook while laying in bed. We watch TV until we fall asleep on our phones. I mean, they're right next to our heads for more than 8 hours a day sometimes.
Yes, and bear in mind, you know, when you say we, that is true of us here in the United States. But as we report in the Nation magazine expose, The governments of Great Britain, France, and Israel, among other nations, have issued very strict limitations on cell phone usage by kids.
Really?
In French schools, there are no more Wi-Fi. There are no iPads.
Meanwhile, here in the United States, schools are being told that iPads are going to replace textbooks. And so we're literally requiring children use Wi-Fi devices through schools.
I know. I have a daughter who's going to turn 13 this week. And, you know, that's her experience in school. And I told her about what happened in France, how, you know, they're not allowing iPads. And she said, "Oh, Dad, that could never happen at our school."
So finally, there is going to be a giant increase in radiation risk coming because the industry is rolling out its 5G network. And you write about this in your article. The industry wants, envisions the Internet of Things, our future. They want our future to be one where we don't just have a smartphone. We have smart homes and smart workplaces where everything is responsive to verbal commands and automated. And that requires much stronger Wi-Fi and wireless networks and radiation. None of these, none of the part of the story that you have exposed seems to be getting in their way unless we demand it.
It's quite interesting. Just like cell phones were introduced onto the consumer market in the 1980s without government testing, we are about to do that again with 5G for the so-called Internet of Things. And it's not necessarily stronger radiation. It's a different type of radiation. And it is, as we quoted the, there's a bunch of independent scientists who are alarmed about this, and they've circulated a petition. And they talk about it massively increasing the radiation. And I think what people need to focus on there is that because of this desire for, you know, smart phones and smart homes and smart workplaces, and the nature of 5G technology is such that the waves don't travel as far as they do off of a cell phone tower. So in order for 5G to come, there will have to be sort of mini cell towers. That's not quite the right word, but they're about the size of a pizza box. And they will have to be installed every roughly 250 feet. So
wow.
They'll be on, you know, telephone poles and street light poles and stuff like that along every street, or it won't work because the waves only travel 250 feet. Well, what does that mean? That means that those, you know, pizza box 5G transmitters are going to be right outside your bedroom window if we go forward with this 5G. And, you know,
and it's so it won't matter if you turn your cell phone off if you're being exposed to it from these transmitters.
That's correct. And that's why those scientists are saying that this massive, is the word they use, a massive increase in radiation will affect the general population. I mean, right now, in theory, you have a choice. Am I going to use a cell phone or not? But if we go to that form of 5G, where it is the Internet of Things and it's everywhere, then, as one scientist told us in our Nation magazine piece, people will be bathed in a smog of radiation 24/7.
Well, Mark,
if we allow this to go forward, and
right.
The government is pushing it, the industry is pushing it. But, you know, I live here in the state of California, and our governor, Jerry Brown, has stood up against this and said that individual local communities, local state, local governments, city and county governments, have the authority to say no to this. So this is not a fait accompli. People can still be very involved in protecting themselves and their communities from this, but it will require getting active, as most political change does.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in The Nation from our website later. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me.
Mark Hertzgaard is The Nation's investigative editor at large, author of 7 books that have been translated into 16 languages. His most recent books include Brave Hearts, Whistleblowing in the Age of Snowden, and Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. We've been discussing his Nation magazine cover story, How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find out more about us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.